We'll do questions at the end of all three of them. So we'll let them all speak first, and then we'll have a little question session after that. First up will be Linda Patterson, a water quality educator from the Lake Champlain Sea Grant. So please join me in welcoming Linda.
Other Long Point camp owners here, and the unique aspect of Long Point is that we are a cooperatively owned property. We have about 100 plus camps, as Eric said, and we have a board and lots of committees, and so we manage ourselves through that. The only thing we own is the camp itself, and we have state rules and we have Long Point rules in terms of our septic. So these are the two camps that my family has acquired over many, many years. And as you can imagine, when we bought them in the 60s, they were like $5,000. So times have changed. And they are right next to each other. So they're only, they're several feet apart, and they share the septic system I'm going to talk about. When I was growing up in the 50s, we did have straight pipes right into the lake. So you can imagine what I would swim around with and see passing by. We then took a pipe and took it off of the top of the septic for the gray water, and we did what's called the crack in the rock system, and my dad would do a dye test and it seemed to be fine, but then we remodeled Springdrift, and so that kicked up the state permitting process and we needed to find a new system. And the system I'm going to describe is also owned by Long Pointers do we have, Jared? Several Long Pointers. And so the system I'm going to describe is our version, but there's several different versions of this system. It's from Maine, and it's called Septitech. And so I'm going to quickly go through the slides of how it works. That is the processor where all the activity goes. But first of all, there is a septic tank, and this is a real live photo of the septic tank under our camp, as you can see. And I'm not sure if I'm good at the pointer, but that is where that septic tank is. I should briefly say that this whole property is ledge or rock, as Graham says, and so there are very few of the mound systems that you saw. There are several of the other alternative systems that Graham talked about, and we had to do this because we are total ledge and nothing for a mound system. So first it goes into the septic tank from the house. That's the location. And then it goes over, just right still under the camp, to this processor, which you saw back here. That's the processor under our camp. They're both 1,000 gallons. So it takes up a lot of the underneath of our camp. And this is basically how it works, which is the effluent comes into the processor and it is sprayed over treatment media that Graham had talked about. This is filled with bacteria that eats up all the stuff. And then it is, there's too many details to go through, but it's circulated through a few times. It's got to, and then it is pumped out over across the road into a drip line system. And supposedly when we first took the system on probably 15 years ago, we were told that the gray water that finally left the tank was so clean you could do your laundry in it. We have not tried that, but that's how effective this system was supposed to be. It is all computerized, and so any alarms, whether if there's any malfunction, comes through this box, and I learned the box very, very well. The first several years were a bit problem-laden, with lots of alarms related to UV lights and high float alarms and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But over the course of these 15 years, we did find, and you will hear from him, Mr. Jared Willie, who, is it Wiley or Willie?
Willie.
He and I have become good buddies because he has been able to help us diagnose most of the issues with the septic system. One thing that Jared wanted me to make sure and include is that there is a UV disinfecting system, so before the gray water goes over the road, across the road into the drip system, it does go through this UV disinfecting unit. As with all of these systems, there are a lot of parts that can break, and they either have planned obsolescence, I would call, or due to the stress of their work, they do break down. So some of these things, like the bulb in the unit, we need to replace on a fairly regular basis, and it's not cheap. And then it goes across the road. I'll show you a picture of the real thing. And this is the drip hose system. And Jared also pointed out that this is a rather a very special system in terms of how it works. And so because we didn't have soil, we had about 6 inches of topsoil cover a rocky area across the road. And then these pipes, hundreds and hundreds of feet, just going back and forth and back and forth. And then through a pressurized system, over a period of time, measured amount of water is effluent is dripped through those. So obviously we can't drive on that area, we can't play croquet on that area, it's an area that just has to be left for the drip hose system. And you see that box in the right hand corner, so this is our system, and the lines go from down here, all the way up to here, back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And all of that stuff right here is in there. And that's what's inside. This is all disassembled for the winter, but there's a filter that, like all the other septic systems, to filter the effluent. And I have to take that apart. One of the things that Jared helped me figure out was I needed to take that apart and take the filter out and clean it. And it's not the sludge from the septic tank, it's just some of the sediment that comes over from the processor. And as long as we keep that clean, we have a pretty alarm-free system. And the only other thing about our system is that there has been an odor issue. And granted, odor issues are fairly common with lots of septic systems. Part of the problem is that it services two camps, and so there's a lot of load on the system. So we tried many solutions, and finally we came up with this, which is sort of like a bathroom fan, and that has seemed to solve the odor, and we have a bunch of happy campers. And I'd like to introduce my three sons, and one wife and two other partners are missing. So that's our septic tank system. And are there any questions, or have I missed anything, septic tank owners? Yeah?
I just have a question about, so is this used year-round, or is this a seasonal usage?
So I did not qualify that. These are seasonal camps. The water is turned off and everything is drained in the winter because our water system is above ground.
And the pipe going across the driveway or whatever, so that's minimal protection as well.
Well, it's buried under the road, but everything is drained.
Can you repeat the question for the
moment? Oh, I'm sorry. So she wanted to know, one, is it winterized or is it seasonal? It's seasonal. And two, the pipe going under the road is buried under the road, and that, as well as everything else in the system, is drained. We also pump the processor and the septic tank every fall. So that there's no liquid in it.
This might be too personal, but what's the grand total on a system like that?
So when we put it in, tell me when I should stop taking questions. When we put it in, like I said, between 10 and 15, or more like 12, 15 years ago, it was $30,000. But every single time they pump a tank, back then it's $250, now it's up to $275. Between two camps, we figured over the long haul, it was worth it. Yep.
What's the acreage of your camps? Is it defense, distribution area?
I don't really know. It's very small. But you saw that drip system?
Yeah.
That's the only place where we needed property to be able to put soil in. Everything else is shoved under the camp. All right?
Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Linda. We're hoping for a little bit more time for all three folks at the end of this segment. Next up is Lynette Claudon. Chief Pollution Control Design Engineer with the Vermont Department of Environmental Conservation. And I will pass it over to Lynette.
Many of my colleagues, I wear a lot of hats. So as Chief Pollution Control Design Engineer, I work for the Clean Water State Revolving Fund. You'll be hearing later from Tom Brown about our own opportunities. So in that capacity, I work basically on these water treatment plants. But with broadening of some of our eligibilities, we can fund a lot of other things as well. And I wear another hat. For the Clean Watersheds Needs Survey Coordinator. And what that means is that it's part of my job is to keep track of what everything costs in terms of pollution control, which can be stormwater, can be wastewater. And then lastly, I am the project lead for the Engineering Planning Advanced Program, which is providing funding to Vermont villages to pursue feasibility studies for wastewater systems. But I am not here to talk about funding, I'm here to talk about case studies. So, more than half of Vermont's villages are lacking community septic facilities. So as lake communities, you're not alone. There's a lot of our Vermont communities that are not having community septic solutions. So even though my job, for the most part, is with wastewater treatment plants, the solutions that we're talking about with you today are not wastewater treatment plants. Although there may be wastewater treatment units involved, it's not wastewater treatment plants. So what we are talking about is sharing small cluster systems, like our last speaker mentioned, and then having larger community-based systems so that we can have basically more affordable wastewater solutions. So we worked with Warren Vermont, and I say we, but I wasn't employed by DEC at that time. In the case of Warren Vermont, they installed a community wastewater disposal system in 2003. Their system incorporated all of the measures that you saw on the last slide. So they upgraded some individual wastewater treatment systems to include effluent filters. They made some systems with cluster systems, and then overall they had two very large community wastewater disposal systems. Now, the overall price tag on that project is $4.6 million in 2003 dollars. So that is a number that's really, really scary to every single community I've ever talked to. However, you'll see that Warren was able to get a number of grants. So their actual indebtedness was around $1 million. And what that translates to is a user fee that ranges between $450 and $700 a year. Now, who thinks that's still expensive? I see it in a smart audience. So here's another one of our villages, Brownsville. They are located in West Windsor near the Ascutney Mountain. That Ascutney Mountain ski area was going bankrupt, but that ski area had a sewer collection system that went down to Windsor to be treated at the Windsor Main Wastewater Treatment Plant. Now, this Brownsville community was able to band together, get a loan, and buy the sewer system from the mountain, because they were liquidating everything. And then they, fortunately or unfortunately, as the case may be, lost a number of septic systems to IDN stormwaters from the river that goes through their community. We did do some of that trace dye testing on the system that was the absolute closest to the river. So they had a cesspool that was about 2 feet from the river, and they'd done a temporary fix to put in some riprap next to that cesspool. And that trace dye takes a lot longer to get through than you'd think. So what we learned in that case, just to get the 2 feet from the cesspool out through those rocks and into the river, that dye took a whole 24 hours. Now, they also loaded that system with a bunch of water. So they put in the trace dye and then they put in 450 gallons of water just to make sure that it would happen as fast as physically possible. And it still, we thought that they failed. The entire project team standing there watching the river for an entire work day and for the water to go 2 feet. And you're convinced it's just not going to come through. The next day, the village manager was out, the whole river had turned yellow. So it can take a while. So in the case of Brownsville, they were able to put the debt repayment for the purchase of the sewer system onto their grand list. But then the user fees for the sewer extension that they built to put their village onto that sewer system then cost the user fees $865 a year. But that does include the treatment fees that are charged by Windsor's main wastewater treatment plant. So that may seem less affordable to you guys, but I'm asking you to still keep an open mind. So this is the case of Rochester. Rochester came in 2018 for a loan to do, I can send you these slides, Kim, if you want. Rochester came in to the program during the grant days in the 1970s, and they built their wastewater collection system, and they have three wastewater disposal fields, larger ones like Warren. So at this point, they have one of the most affordable rates in the state at $340 per year. They came in 2018 to refurbish one of those fields at a cost of about $500,000. Our program was able to subsidize half of that. And I'm not sure what their new rate is. Maybe Tom Brown can tell you. But still much more affordable in the long run than some of those other systems. So if you look at these numbers and you are afraid of how much they cost, that's what Grafton did. They had done a study 10, 15 years ago. And they decided that instead of spending $3 million, to build their solution, that they were ready to pump out work hands. So this is the absolute minimum cost that you do a community system for. And in Grafton, within the village districts, they require all property owners to submit proof that they pumped out at least every 5 years. You still may want to pump out faster depending on your usage. So in the case of individual on-site systems, I think you guys are all here because you know they're very expensive. So these are, we have a, Chris will be talking about his community, his on-site loan program later, but the data that he looked at is a broad range from the cheapest is around $1,000 for fix, but the more expensive one was between $35,000 and $40,000 per fix, so the average cost was around $28,000. So we have some very, very small data sets of one system to look at the differences between conventional systems, mountain systems, and innovative alternative systems. So when you look at the costs and compare them to the wastewater treatment plant costs, basically what you get is you want to be accounting for your replacement costs or any indebtedness that you have, plus your O&M costs, So you can see the conventional system is in line with a municipal wastewater system, and that system's about twice as much. And then a innovative alternative system can be as much.
What's the conventional?
So that's the conventional system is a gravity system with the beds that Fran showed in a number of graphics. So there's no pump station involved. There's not a bunch of soil trucked in to raise the depth to the groundwater table. So here's my contact information if you have questions. We also are putting a lot of great information out on our village website.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Lynette. And then last in this segment, we have Jim Fitzpatrick, who is a resident of Thompson's Point, has some experience in a community system as well.
So, can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
All right, good. I just put some information down on a card, and I'll put them back there if anybody cares to sort of look at this stuff again. In the 1980s, first of all, Thompson's Point has about 120 camps. It's on land that's owned by the town, so all the lots are lease lots. In the 1980s, multiple camps started, septic systems started failing. I would probably say that all the systems were failing at the time, but some were visibly failing. And they needed to be taken care of immediately. Some camps, I believe they actually condemned a couple of camps briefly for a while, and that got everybody's attention. Everybody claimed their systems were just fine, but in reality, of course, with about 2 inches of soil on the ledge, nobody's system was really working up to 1980 standards. And then the question became, do we let the camp owners fix them themselves, or do we do something collectively? There were plenty of people that, because they felt their system was fine, didn't want to do anything with anybody else. In fact, some people actually did spend a significant amount of money upgrading their own and took it seriously. There were a group of us who decided to take a look at a collective solution. And camp owners volunteered. There was no real campaign. Informally amongst several people who were interested, we all contributed $1,000 a piece to come up with a plan, to do some planning with engineers to see if a viable system could be designed. The idea was that planning money would be refunded if the system was adopted by enough people. So we had the engineering firm plan the system. The estimated cost for the system was about $1 million. We were trying to figure out how are we going to do that. And then there was the EPA loans that were available for these kinds of systems. Zero interest. But the Leaseholders Association was not a municipality, so they could not apply for a loan. So there was this long, I think struggle is too strong a word, but it took a fair amount of time to convince the town of Shalott, who owned the land, that it's in their best interest to apply for this loan, and then we would pay them back. And that took some doing. Some people were for it immediately, and others were. Thought it was a slippery slope with the leaseholders and the camp owners. Who knows what they'll be asking for next. The question then became, are we going to make everybody get on the system? Is it going to be voluntary? shortly after all the agreements were made, the town required, to maintain your lease, required all camp owners to be part of the system. There were some grandfathering, because some people had spent up to $50,000 in their own money putting in a very good system. Some had put in some mediocre systems. So they allowed a few people to say, okay, you don't have to come on until, and I don't remember what the specific dates were. The initial assessment, we're assessed once a year. The initial assessment, of course, is for the loan repayment, for base maintenance and usage of the system, and the rest, any additional is based on water usage. And people who, there was a part of Thompson's Point has a central water system, the older part of the point that's been there longer. The rest, people take it out of the lake, but they have wells they've drilled. Those are all metered at the intake of the camp. And that's what they use to measure or to determine how much you're using. If you have your garden hose and whatever, you're allowed to put that in before the meter for washing your car or whatever. As of today, the loan's been paid off. It's been paid off for a while, a few years. Now, of course, the base fee is just, we have a person takes care of the entire system and maintains it and fixes everything. They do great, as we all know. Then we still have the usage meter for using the system. The system works very well. It was designed to be beyond the capacity of 120 camps. I think on July 4th weekend or something, we come pretty close to the system limits. If Thompson's Point, the geography of Thompson's Point is such that the camps are fairly close to the lake. So practically all of the, I'm not sure, almost all of the camps share a collection tank. So every two or three camps, some just by the nature of the setup had one collection, they just have one per camp, depending on the geography of where the camps are. And it's all pumped up to a main line that goes around the whole camp. So when you're pumping, someone once told me, never pump anything uphill. You're going to have problems. So the base fee takes care of all that. Now, of course, just about the time the loan was made off, things start to break because they've been in the system for a while. So everybody said, well, I thought we were going to pay for this, or how are we going to pay for this? How come it hasn't gone down and all that? So you deal with those things. I was just looking to see if I had any air notes here. No, I think that's about it. It works well. So we have a committee that is two or three people from the Leaseholders Association and I think one or two people from the Select Board. And every year they meet and talk, or maybe even more than that, I don't know, as needed perhaps. But they do meet at least once a year and they decide, okay, what do we need for maintenance? What do we need to replace? So that's what we've done. So thank you very much.